You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com, and this week, as we're looking at some of the teams that are trying to win this NL West division, of course we talk normally about the Dodgers and the Giants, but we also have to at least put in the conversation about the Arizona Diamondbacks, who really, until they started playing the Cardinals this week, were only about five games out of first place. And they're really in contention more because the Dodgers and Giants just aren't very good these days. But they are over 500, and so you have to give the Diamondbacks a little props there. The Dodgers, trying to play with a sense of urgency, have been in Cincinnati and have been doing what they're supposed to do during when you're playing not-so-good teams. And, of course, the Giants are just trying to get healthy, stay on the field, and figure out that that starting rotation and try to get back to the postseason. So that is a quick look at the NL West. Ken, I've been very critical of the Dodgers' bullpen, especially since I got to see it up close and personal recently in Houston. Rough series for the Dodgers. But they had a very good game recently in Cincinnati, so I think we need to mention that and maybe talk about it a little bit. And I realize it's just a short little amount of time, but it's got to be a little bit of relief, so to speak, to see the relievers kind of have a game like that, and maybe this could springboard them a little bit.
Well, they hope so. You know, it's only one game. And the competition level wasn't the same as they faced in Houston and got beat up with, but, you know, it's one game. So as Mattingly's trying to preach, season starts anew every day and forget about what happened in the past and just try to win today, and they were able to do that last night.
What, you know, kind of looking ahead, I mean, September call-ups are coming up, and of course when you have a contending team, they don't like to, they really don't like to, you know, change things too much when it comes to the dynamic of a 25-man roster, but would you say that, you know, part of the problems of the bullpen are maybe fatigue a little bit, and do you see them maybe like fortifying that area more than maybe other areas when they're allowed to expand those rosters?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that you'll see them bring up Yimi Garcia, who's been up and down, kind of been their extra guy that they keep bringing up and sending back down. Maybe one of the more intriguing guys is Mike Bolsinger, who got bumped from the starting rotation. A lot of people felt it was undeserved when they made the trades for Latos and Wood. He got bumped out of the rotation. He was pitching pretty well while he was in it. And they've used him at AAA, both in long relief. And I think he's set up to replace Latos if Latos doesn't pitch well when he comes back into the rotation Saturday. He's been bumped because of off days and because he wasn't pitching well since the acquisition. And I could see Bolsinger taking that spot again if Latos doesn't turn it around quickly.
Okay. And, you know, when a player with Clayton Kershaw's, with his reputation, of course, his status in baseball, when he makes any kind of comment, it's going to be, you know, it's going to resonate. He said after the last loss in Houston that they need to be playing with more of a sense of urgency. He did use the word panic originally and then try to kind of maybe temper off that a little bit. But Don Mattingly agreed that there needs to be, you know, that he's kind of has a call for urgency. You know, there's like a fine line between having a sense of urgency and panicking, which is, of course, what you don't want your team to have. But, you know, how do you see kind of the Dodgers, how they respond to that? And do you feel like there's a sense of panic with these guys?
Well, I don't think a panic. And I think really what he was getting at is that there isn't a sense of panic and that they're almost too laid back, almost like they expect to win no matter what. They know they're in a weak division. They know they've been leading it all year, even though they haven't played that well. They rely on their two big starting pitchers. And I think, you know, his point was that that's not necessarily going to get it done, you know, just kind of coasting. Jimmy Rollins used the term cruise control last night. And so I guess what he was trying to overcompensate for the fact that he thinks this team is too laid back, too mellow, and kind of taking for granted that they're going to win no matter what because they've been able to stay in first place even though they haven't played well. So I think he's trying to light a fire under him because he knows that, you know, he's seen three times the Giants win it all, and he knows that they're not going to go away. They're not going to roll over and die. So but he also knows that the Dodgers haven't played well against good teams all year long. They've been beating up on bad teams. And it's just a bad combination when you're going down the stretch when it really counts and you're going up against a team that's been battle-tested for World Series action. If you think you're going to be able to coast on cruise control and beat that team, you're probably going to fail. So I think he was just trying to light a fire, and I don't know that you'll really be able to tell if he did until they go home and play the Giants, because I think beating up the Reds, they probably were going to do that anyway.
Here to talk all things Giants with my friend Chris Haft, covers the Giants for MLB.com. And Chris, where to begin? This was a crucial series. As we're recording this, the Giants are playing the Cubs and not having much luck with it. It's kind of interesting just watching sort of the Giants and the Dodgers kind of limping toward the finish line a little bit, even though we're still a little bit further away. But it's got to be frustrating for them. They know they have to beat the good team, and they're not really having a lot of luck with that recently.
You're absolutely right. They know it, and they can't do anything about it except try to play better. I know it sounds very self-evident, but they're not hitting with men in scoring position. That's not good. The starting pitching isn't keeping them in every game as it should. And essentially the blueprint for victory is not working.
Yeah, it's they have had a lot of injuries, there's no doubt. I mean, I know that, you know, the good teams that have a lot of pride, and that would be the Giants, they don't use that as an excuse, but it's surely a factor that they really haven't. I mean, Bruce Bochy's barely had like a full strength team to work with all year. Let's talk a little bit about Matt Cain, because he still is not back to the Matt Cain that we know, and maybe he'll never get back there again, but there has to be some concern now that it's really hard to let him work through things coming back from this injury, when working through things means during an actual game when they're clinging to, you know, trying to win this division. So how tough has that been, and what do you think should happen with him moving forward?
Really tough, Allison. I talked to a scout yesterday who, of course, shall remain anonymous. He said, at best, Matt Cain is a back-of-the-rotation starter for a non-contending team.
Oof.
Yeah, that was, after watching him excel, you know, looking up to see him break in, saw his first win, all that stuff, I witnessed his entire big league career, heard people rave about him, you know, seen him back up the raves. He's not the same guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if he went on the disabled list at some point really soon. And, they could take the time at that point to maybe not even pitch at all.
I want to get down to the nitty-gritty on this this play that happened in Washington that involved Bryce Harper. So, and the reason I want to talk about it is because I think an inning later, Pat Murphy was ejected for something else, it seems. But I want you to kind of explain this to everybody, like what happened. So Harper, there was a ball that was kind of a dead ball because they deemed it to be foul, and replay showed that it didn't even touch Harper. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, kind of a critical situation in the game. The Nationals were leading 4-2. Had a couple guys on, two outs in the inning. Sixth inning, Bryce Harper up, and lefty Mark Zepchinski, don't ask me to spell that, he's in relief in the face of left-handed hitting Harper, throws a ball inside. Harper hits it down the first baseline. The Yonder Alonso picks it up, steps on first base, but Harper, almost as soon as he hits it, kind of winces in pain, kind of drops down in a crouch, and the umpires quickly signal dead ball, foul ball, and the at-bat resumes. And, you know, the Padres interim manager, Pat Murphy, comes out to, you know, to find out, you know, did that ball really hit him? The umpires called it a dead ball right away. And then eventually, the inning goes on. And Harper walks, and then a little bit later, Ryan Zimmerman hits a grand slam. Nationals go on to win 8-3. But, you know, what happens, you know, certainly, you know, a half inning later, is Murphy, through the magic television, Allison, gets a chance to look at the replay, and the replay certainly makes it look like that ball did not hit anything having to do with Bryce Harper anywhere. His leg, he wears a protective guard on his right shin, missed all of that. And so I think when the ejection you saw, an inning later, stemmed from that, and just the overall frustration of how the night went. Pat was first to say that, hey, umpires make mistakes, coaches make mistakes. Our responsibility is to get the next guy out. So, it was just kind of a fitful evening for the Padres, who had an early lead, let that slip away, but overly just frustrated. James Shields called it a terrible call that, we've got to get that right. We need the umpires. So, yeah, I think just generally everyone was just a little disappointed with the way that thing shook out.
And that's got to be just at this point in the season. I mean, if you look at the standings before this series started, it was like, okay, if everything falls into place, I mean, I kind of jokingly said I'm like four Padres wins away from now declaring that they're in this race. And of course it's, it's a little bit less than borderline, but I would imagine that when the Padres are sitting there, like, being non-contenders most of the season and watching the Dodgers and Giants like losing game after game and realizing that with a little bit of luck, they might be able to make this interesting. I guess that's got to be just a killer when something like that happens.
Yeah. That's whether they're in this thing, Allison, because of their doing, or if it's because of the teams above them faltering, or it's probably a little of both, to be honest with you. But it's kind of on life support, but they're kind of hanging in there. And I know Arizona's been the people are kind of like the chic pick, hey, look at the Diamondbacks. Well, before the series started here against the Nationals, the Padres were only a game and a half behind the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, sure, stranger things have happened. But, this is a critical stretch for the Padres now. They have a makeup game against the Rockies in September. And the only reason I'm mentioning this now is because that eliminates an off day for them. So this is a stretch of 23 games in 23 days, which, I hate to say it's going to make or break them. I think we've gone through a few stretches already that I think will ultimately play a huge role in their fate this season. But, this is a pretty big stretch for them right now that they need to play well. They need to play well against a team that needs to play really well themselves, and the Nationals and the Phillies. They swept the Padres earlier this year, and then the whole month of September against teams from the NL West.
Here with my friend Steve Gilbert, who is covering a Diamondbacks team that is suddenly in the conversation for October, and I'm not just talking about the last weekend of the regular season. So, Steve, I made a proclamation on Twitter that I cared about a lot. That said, I believe that the Arizona Diamondbacks are in this NL West race. What do you think about that? Do you feel like being 5.5 games out at this late juncture gives them a chance?
Well, I think certainly it gives them a chance. The thing they have working for them is that they've got a lot of games in September against the rest of the NL West. So if they want to make up ground on the Dodgers or the Giants, they're going to have an opportunity against each of those teams, both home and road, to do so. So that's the great thing about interleague play is that, you do kind of have things in your own hands when it comes to making up ground, particularly late in the season. I think that's kind of an exciting thing for fans. Now, whether or not they stay in it till then, it's up to them. But they've certainly played to this point, and also, in fairness, the Dodgers and Giants have allowed them to get back in this race. But they're certainly there right on the cusp of being in postseason contention right now.
Yeah, I mean, I should say, and I don't think there's anything wrong. I don't think this is like a slight toward the team, or that there's anything wrong with just being a team that is largely mediocre, but could definitely take advantage of the fact that the leaders in the division are just playing terrible baseball. And I know that I have even more of a vivid just image of this because the Dodgers were just in Houston, and I watched a no-hitter and a sweep of the Dodgers and comeback wins galore. And the Dodgers just, they had Greinke and Kershaw, and they still lost both of those games, and they just don't have, anybody in the bullpen. So these are, things are standing out. But, really, when you look at it, both of those teams are just underperforming, or they're just not very good, quite frankly.
I think it's such a difference, Allison, in that the expectations. The Dodgers have the $300 million payroll. They were picked by many to win the division. So there's heavy expectations on them. The Giants are the Giants. They can get a pass for whatever after winning three World Series in the last 5 years. But here are the Diamondbacks, who lost 98 games last year. And, you know, a 500 record was kind of looked at as, wow, if they could do that, that would really be something. So really, they're just kind of playing with house money if they happen to find themselves in the race in September. And I was talking with a couple of players yesterday, and, you know, it's funny, we always in the media assume that players know exactly what the standings are, or that they look at the situation like we do, but most of the guys in there, when you ask them what their record was, they couldn't tell you because they just get so involved in the day-to-day routine of the season that they're not even paying attention to that. But one of the things that one of the guys said to me is, you know, we're a bunch of young guys in here. You know, we don't know any better, and we're just playing. There's no pressure on us. We're just having fun and playing, and if we're in a race, we're in a race. But I think this year, there is no pressure because there were so little expectations put on them.
And I'm here with Thomas Harding to have our weekly chat about everything that is going on with the Colorado Rockies. And Thomas, I'm not really sure exactly where I wanted to start, like when I was making my notes, but let's just get right down to it. Let's talk about David Hale. I was following along sort of more on Twitter than I was actually watching it, but he had four wild pitches in one game, which is a club record. What was going on, and what were you thinking during that process?
Well, I'll tell you what I was thinking during that process was, this is hard to watch. Then after a while, it got to be so weird that it was fun to watch. He had four wild pitches by the third inning of that game, was down 5-0, and then he ends up retiring the final 10 guys he faces and finishing with 9 strikeouts. He's one of 10 guys in history that has had four wild pitches and 9 strikeouts. And I mean, that was just endlessly fascinating, because if you look at the list of guys that are on there, some really good pitchers are on there. Walter Johnson, he threw a 12-inning game, and he did it. Nolan Ryan has done it, and Phil Negro's done it also. I mean,
really?
Yes. You know, and a lot of those you could see where they were just pitching outstanding that particular game. I think Jack Morris also threw 9 innings and had 4 wild, I think he had 5 wild pitches, excuse me, and something like 12 strikeouts. So it's crazy, but when you have a game like David Hale where he only goes 6 innings and the wild pitches end up basically taking the team out of a game, it's really not a lot of fun to watch until all the trivia starts rolling.
Yeah, so what did he say afterward? I mean, is it just one of those things that happens? Is it losing focus? Is it letting it get in your head after you do, like, 2 of them? I mean, how does this happen?
Actually, it was none of the above, and it was really fascinating because he was trying to do something that I don't think you should be doing. He decided, it was pointed out to him that, especially on a slider, he had a flaw in his delivery. So he decided, okay, in these 4 days between starts, I'm going to correct that flaw. So he's out there thinking about correcting a flaw and trying to pitch, and he's facing the New York Mets, who are a first-place team. I mean, it was a recipe for disaster, and that's not something you usually do in the major leagues. I mean, yeah, you make adjustments as the season goes on, but I don't think that very many people would recommend, hey, let's make this major change right in the middle of the season or in 4 days between starts.
I would think that if I was sitting there watching that, and if I had been covering the team all season, I would probably think, you know, this is kind of fitting. This is just one of more, like, random, strange, bizarre thing that's happening in this very forgettable season.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and the day before, Chris Russon, who a few days after pitching a shutout of Coors Field, which is rare, he ended up giving up a club record, what was it, 8 doubles or 9? I can't remember. I believe it was 9. No, it was 8 doubles, which is a club record, and he only lasted 2 innings plus 8 batters in the third inning. So, yeah, a lot of ridiculous stuff is happening this season.
Well, let's talk about some things that might help the cause a little bit. Some roster moves. Maybe you can sort this out for us. But they called up a couple of relievers to have some reinforcement there, and they activated Chad Bettis from the disabled list. So I guess even with a week and a half left before they can expand their rosters, they needed to get some reinforcements up now. Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.